This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson. Today we'll hear from an artist who posts every detail of his life online, and I'll also talk with the saxophonist Joshua Redman. But first, Defiance is the latest Hollywood film to deal with the Holocaust. Except for Anne Frank, for the first three decades after World War II, Hollywood pretty much avoided the subject. But for the last three decades, it seems like not a year goes by without some big Holocaust film. But Defiance is different because it's not about noble victims or their non-Jewish saviors.
We're family. We have to stick together.
Directed by Ed Zwick, it tells the story of three rough Jewish brothers, the Bielskis, who flee the Nazis to hide out in the Polish forest.
We know these woods. They'll never find us in here.
Hundreds more Jews follow them, and they all form a secret forest community under the Bielskis' protection and command.
It is impossible.
Nothing is impossible.
And most of them survive the war. And this tale, believe it or not, is based on a true story. Liev Schreiber plays one of the brothers, Zush Bielski.
Only four bullets. And we'll have to make them count. For my brothers, for my parents, and for all the others.
Liev Schreiber, welcome back to Studio 360.
Thank you for having me.
So, did you know the story that inspired Defiance, that Defiance is about, before you got the script?
I was really surprised that I didn't, you know, because I'd done a few Holocaust films and sort of researched on my own for a film I had done, but hadn't heard of the Bielskis.
Why is that? It seems like such an obvious kind of counterexample to the horrendously victimized people to say, hey, look at these tough guys. They did this amazing thing.
Well, I've been asked that question so many times that I've developed a couple theories. One of them might be that, you know, there are so many thousands and thousands of tragic stories from the Holocaust that I think maybe people felt a responsibility to tell them above the triumphant ones, mm-hmm. or the ones with the more happy endings.
Mm-hmm.
I think the other thing is that one of the things that drew me to the story was the moral ambiguity involved in what these men went through, not only to survive, but to create this community and to come out at the end of the war. When I heard that both Tuvia and Zush moved to New York, and one drove a taxi, they started a trucking company, you got the sense that these guys were keeping a pretty low profile about things. And I guess also in my own research and talking to survivors of the Holocaust, that I didn't find anyone who was very eager to tell me what had happened. You got the sense that it was painful for people to remember it and to retell it.
The Bielski brothers, of whom you play Zush, do some horrific, violent things in mm-hmm. order to survive and exact vengeance and everything. Were you careful to try to show them in all of their non-heroic moral ambiguity?
I was very interested in it. You can only go so far, I think, in a major motion picture, but it was certainly what compelled me about the story. You got the sense from reading Nechama Tech's book that these were relatively rough guys long before the Nazis invaded Belarusia,
mm-hmm.
Who were sort of uniquely suited, I think, to confront what happened. I thought there was a nice balance of it. I think that some of it comes out in the rivalry with Daniel Craig's character, Tuvia.
Right. Let's listen to a scene between the two of you. This is you as Zush Bielski and Daniel Craig, as you say, as your brother, Tuvia Bielski, after you've set up your camp in the forest.
We will send for everyone who is left alive.
And if there are hundreds, Tuvia?
Then we will provide.
And when the Germans follow these hundreds, what then?
I won't let that happen.
You won't let that happen?
No, I will bring them out myself.
From the ghetto?
Yes.
So, now you are Moses, huh?
Zush, go back to work. You're wasting time.
I'm not the one who's wasting time, Tuvia.
I cannot have you questioning me in front of the others. We're family. We have to stick together.
This tension between the brothers, in addition to the larger, heroic, amazing salvation, is the thing that drives this story, yeah?
For me, yeah. I think also there's a period which my character separates from the community in the woods and joins the Russian partisans to fight against the Nazis and experiences an interesting mix of anti-Semitism and they're encouraging him to fight with them, but he obviously doesn't hold the same rights as the Russian soldiers. It was something that my grandfather had mentioned about World War II, that for a lot of Jews, the Russians, who were largely responsible for ending the war and liberating most of the camps, had a less than warm treatment of the Jews after the war as well. And it was something that he had remarked on, that he said that to a large degree for a lot of Jews living in Eastern Europe, it was out of the frying pan into the fire.
In Defiance, you have a big fight scene with Daniel Craig. I read that you studied to be a fight choreographer, a job description I didn't really know existed. What is that process like, where you're rehearsing this obviously many take fight scene? How do you do that? And how long does it take?
It depends on the fight, you know. Fight choreographers, it is a strange job. It's more popular in the theater than it is in film. In film, they're mm-hmm. generally called stunt directors, stunt choreographers. This fight we felt was pretty important because it was sort of the parting of the two brothers, and it had to be as emotional as it had to be action-packed. How we did that, how we got a fight to a point where what's too far for brothers? Because clearly for these two brothers, nothing seems to be too far. So something has to go too far. And we decided that it was one of them pushes it to the point where it becomes lethal. They realize that their differences are so vast that they're willing to kill each other. And at that point, they separate. Daniel and I started to rehearse the fight probably the second week that we were in Lithuania, which we probably spent about a good 3 or 4 weeks rehearsing it while we were shooting.
And is it choreographed to the degree of a dance where I'll move here and then you'll swing there and then I'll fall here? Or is there some quasi-real fighting improvisation that goes on?
The really good ones are choreographed, I think, or the good ones that I've been involved in. It's dangerous when you start improvising fights. I've done that. We had an actor in a production of The Scottish Play, Alec Baldwin, actually, almost lopped off the finger of his Macduff. And you've got to be careful improvising. Daniel Craig also has a pretty extensive theater background, is a trained actor, so between the two of us, it was nicely choreographed.
Well, you shoot a lot of big machine guns in this movie. Did the 12-year-old boy in you respond well to that?
Yeah. The 12-year-old boy responded well to seeing them. The 40-year-old man had some issues with actually holding them. They're really, you know, you expect them to be light and easy to handle. You know, you see these guys sort of waving them around. They're really dangerous, and they're very heavy, and they make an awful lot of noise. So that took some getting used to.
But was it fun?
Yeah, I'll admit that it was fun. It was fun. But it was also terrifying. Those loads are really, they call them half loads, that are just basically blanks. They're very loud, and they're exploding in your face, and you're trying to run one foot in front of the other without bumping into the actor in front of you, shooting this weapon, which feels pretty lethal. I know right now I'm not doing a very good job of promoting myself as an action star, but I figured that honesty was best.
No, and you're very convincing as you're mowing down Nazis.
Thank you.
Was that fun, mowing down Nazis?
Mowing down Nazis is fun. You know, it's not as much fun on film as it looks. It's more fun on stage, you know, because you get to see the Nazis fall. Whereas on film, as you're rushing into the abyss with a machine gun, you're really rushing into a camera crew who are holding flags and things like that. So you don't actually get to see the Nazis go down. But the few times that I did get to see the Nazis go down, I was very pleased with myself.
As you say, you've researched the Holocaust for other work you've done. You directed the film of Jonathan Safran Foer's Everything is Illuminated about a young American Jew tracking down his Ukrainian grandfather's experience during the war and the Holocaust. Is it just accidental that you've gone there again, or is this an abiding fascination of yours?
I think I've gotten myself to the place in my career now where people think of me when they think of Jewish parts. I'm not entirely sure how I feel about that. But I certainly know that personally, as an actor and as an artist, I've been interested in trying to explore my own heritage. I'm really from the Lower East Side of New York and don't know anything else. But as an actor, I'm kind of given an opportunity to explore all of these worlds. And I think when my grandfather passed, that was the beginning of me becoming interested in my heritage and where his family was from.
Your mother, who raised you mainly, is Jewish. Did she raise you with any kind of definite ritualized consciousness of being Jewish, religious, ethnic, or otherwise?
No, she raised me with that kind of ambiguous New York cultural Jew thing, which just, you know, is that thing where you sort of think you're better than everybody else, and you argue constantly, and, you know, that was it.
It sounds, in the descriptions I've read of your upbringing and of your mother, that she was truly a bohemian, not these kinds of bourgeois bohemians who multiply, but really a kind of free spirit of that age, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she had some interesting experiences. I mean, my mom was in the SLP and had some very red experiences as a young
woman. That's the Socialist Labor Party,
yes, Socialist Labor Party. And had a period as an activist when she was younger that I think she remembers very fondly. I also think that she's enamored of everything Eastern European. You know, the first books that she wanted me to read were the Russians, the classical music. It's she is someone, I think, like me, who is sort of obsessed with that Eastern European culture.
Well, it's interesting that she raised you on the Lower East Side 50 or 75 years after it was no longer the crucible of Jewish Eastern European immigration.
Well, I think it was about socialism. Back uh-huh. then, in the early 70s, the Lower East Side was kind of a hotbed of squats, and my mm-hmm. mom thought squats were very cool.
But you actually rented an apartment, I presume.
Yes, eventually.
Really? There yes. was some squatting going
we
on?
We did some squatting. We did some squatting on 1st and 1st.
I lived on 9th and 1st. Maybe I saw a little squatter boy down there as I was.
You may have. He probably at that point looked more like little squatter girl. She also refused to cut my hair until I was 12.
This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson, and I'm here today with the actor Liev Schreiber, who stars in the new film Defiance. We were talking about your childhood in the 70s and early 80s, and you were this bohemian, long-haired child squatter living on the Lower East Side. When you finally went to a fairly fancy private school in Manhattan, were you well-loved and accepted there, or considered a freak?
I think I was considered a freak if I had to choose between the two, which kind of made me, you know, uniquely suited to Hollywood.
Yeah, yes.
No, I think there's something to be said for that kind of alienation that you...
Yeah.
That I think it's a good breeding ground for actors, that you teach your children that they are strange and unique, and then your children have a difficult time assimilating and become obsessed with that. And I think that's sort of at the core of what acting is that ironically, it's not that thing to be better or to be more. I think at the core of it is a desire to assimilate.
And understand what this other person is and to what degree I can psychologically sympathize with them sufficiently to pretend I'm them.
Yeah. And I think also to some degree to feel that you belong, that you are a part of a group. I think probably the most satisfying feeling that comes from acting for me is playing a live audience. When you hear a live audience react, you get the sense that they are in tune with you or they are agreeing with you, and that's the real thrill of it.
Well, you are arguably the best, and certainly there is no more critically acclaimed stage actor of your generation. You got a Tony a few years ago for the revival of the David Mamet play Glengarry Glen Ross. You do seem to do some definitive Shakespeare role year after year, Cymbeline, Hamlet, Henry V. And I've seen you on stage several times, and there seems to be a tremendous glee in your performance. Is the stage really what you'd give up everything else to do?
Yeah. I mean, I would just do theater, but for two things. It's very difficult to make a decent living, particularly doing classical theater. The other thing is that 8 shows a week becomes a really, really, really grueling schedule. Talk radio almost wiped me out, the Bogosian show. Glengarry was, you know, when you have a show that has that kind of buoyant humor in it, you can kind of ride the wave, the audience's energy. But it's still pretty brutal. Anything more than 3 or 4 months would tend to knock me on my butt. I was always very impressed with musical theater actors who, you know, day in and day out would do these 3-hour incredible shows with singing and dancing for years. Having just had my second child, I suddenly realized all of these other things I can do with time that have nothing to do with acting or directing.
One of the movies you have coming out is a film by Ang Lee called Taking Woodstock, in which I understand you play a transvestite?
Yeah, yeah. Transvestite, yes. Drag queen, sex worker type who does security for the guy who is responsible for bringing Woodstock to Bethel, New York. And things got pretty hot and heavy once people realized what the real numbers were. And so Elliot got, as some security, this very large cross-dressing guy from New York.
And was that fun, to play a cross-dresser?
It's always fun to put on women's clothing and run around in heels. It was really fun. I had just come off doing Wolverine as well, so I had bulked up for that. So I was.
You play Sabretooth.
I play Sabretooth in that. So I was truly a grotesque woman. And Ang Lee's, I couldn't figure out why Ang Lee was interested in this sort of Borscht Belt comedy about Woodstock. It just doesn't, his choices are so strange to me. But then having worked with him and talked to him a bit, he really sees it as a pivotal moment in American history, Woodstock, that it was the end of an era and the beginning of another one, and that there was some truth to the notion that it was essentially a remarkable congregation around the idea of love. Having known Ang Lee a little bit, he's not the kind of person who you would expect to be that sort of emotional or spiritual. He's not sappy at all. But he mines these stories for these kinds of sort of deeper sort of human truths. And I was just very excited to be working with him.
Rolling back maybe to the 70s, was there a moment in your youth where you decided, geez, this looks great, this acting thing. I want to do that. Was there this aha moment?
I was in the school band. I played the bass clarinet in Mr. Sheik's band at IS 70. And we were performing the Mendelssohn Wedding March for a production of A Midsummer Night's Dream. I just remembered watching them. Do the play within a play with Nick Bottom and Pyramus and Thisbe and all of that, and just thinking that it looked like so much more fun than playing the bass clarinet. And I think that was the beginning.
Liev Schreiber, thanks very much for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
Liev Schreiber is one of the stars of the new film Defiance, and this spring he'll be in the Ang Lee film Taking Woodstock.